Okay, so today's topic is under the heading of meditation and following the theme of jhana and qualifying that as a practical approach. There can be a great deal of mythologizing of jhana, confusing of jhana, tremendous amount of desire around jhana, a whole lot of views and opinions around jhana, so that just trying to place it in a context that's useful for practice. And I think one of the things that, say right off the bat, is to give a definition in the sense of the word. The word jhana comes from the verb jhayati, which means to meditate or contemplate. And so it's the result of a meditative practice. And the I think one of the things that, as Buddhism was being introduced to the West, then it got confused really quickly, because the early translators used trance as the translation of the word jhana. So that isn't quite what the Buddha had in mind. So that that the sense of making I think it's important for recognizing that, say, the place of, say, jhana in the when we read the suttas or we hear Dhamma talks, when we're talking over the there's a small group of us that gather and set out, okay, what are we going to try to cover? How are we going to do it? There's top of the list was sort of, what does an upasaka need to know about jhana? And, because I think many people will tend to just gloss over or glaze over reading the suttas or hearing about it, just kind of glaze over and think, it doesn't apply to me. I mean, that's just too refined. What is it? And what's it mean for somebody's trying to calm down a bit with their 30-minute a day practice? And so that they. Is that something that is there a relevance to it? And I think there is, because there, what it's pointing to is and particularly, I'm speaking from the perspective of Ajahn Chah and the way that he presented it, that these are natural states of mind that a point to a fundamental stillness and clarity that the mind can realize or can accomplish and can experience. And that is that quality of clarity and stillness is really important for any kind of penetrative insight, and for a say like a stillness, or maybe like a increased unshakable quality within the heart. You sort of realize, you know, so much of what we get caught up in is just kind of froth in the realm of the world, you know, there's a deeper happiness and well-being that is possible. So that's a, you know, it's a big motivation to just say, I can put that down. I can let that go. And the same with, you know, it's easy, to, especially, you know, in the world, the amount of stimulation, both in terms of things that are exciting, but then also things that are bring up irritation, aversion. You realize, oh, I can, no, that's just agitating. I don't need to do that. Or, say, moving towards the endless sort of election cycle of America. I don't have to buy into the all the views and opinions and that people are talking about. And just realize there's something that is much more worthy of cherishing, and so that stillness of the mind. I think as a generally the Ajahn Chah in particular, generally the forest tradition. I mean, they'll place a lot of importance on the. Say on the jhanas, on jhana practice, but it's within a context of mindfulness always comes first, and it's not all of the really accomplished meditation teachers, masters that I've met. Had the opportunity to draw close to, have all put mindfulness always comes first. That is the... and one, I think that's really encouraging for all of us, because you realize, yes, I can do mindfulness. And sometimes... you know, you're really, oh, I've got to actually be mindful to do that. but you realize that's within the realm of our experience, within our capability, to be able to place that attention on the cultivation of mindfulness, and then what arises from a continuity of mindfulness is this collecting of the mind, steadying of the mind, come to fruition in a jhana state. So it's based on, predicated on, dependent on mindfulness. So the application of mindfulness, the exercising of wise attention is a essential piece of the developing of jhana. And I had there's a really interesting verse in the Samyutta Nikaya, that sometimes It's in the first few say chapters of the Samyutta are teachings that the Buddha gives to devas and that's another thing that people oftentimes glaze over with as well. And that, certainly for me, I used to glaze over on it because most of it's in verse. And my own kind of sentiment of verse is sort of, why don't you just say it, you know? So but anyway, that's my own defilements. The reality is within this that whole section at the beginning of the Samyutta, there's some very very interesting suttas, and they're sometimes very short, very pithy. One of them is in the Samyutta 2, Sutta number 7, and this particular deva praises jhana as the kind of the opening or as an entry point or an access point to be free from the confined to be from confined space of say samsara or the attachments. And the Buddha, and of course he addresses the Buddha in verse, and then the Buddha replies in verse because, say, the deva is particularly focusing on jhana. And the Buddha replies, sort of, even in a confining place, they find it. The Dhamma for the attainment of Nibbana. Those who have gained mindfulness are rightly well-centered. So it's like, rather than the Buddha sort of placing, extolling jhana as the only sort of way, or as the sole way, or as some special sort of thing. No, it's that mindfulness that allows this, say, right concentration to arise, to be rightly well-centered. And that's a really important point. That's it for the sutta. I mean, the Buddha is just sort of bringing attention back to the fact mindfulness, then that settled mind, then right concentration. And when you reflect on it, anything that we would call a jhana, if it isn't imbued and endowed with mindfulness, it's really not, say, it's not samma samadhi, it's not right concentration, it's not right meditation. And that's something that the, Ajahn Chah, the forest traditions, all placed a tremendous emphasis on. That developing of mindfulness because this fundamental quality of knowing, of awareness, is the root of clarity. And then if you start looking back in terms of the various lists of dhammas that are constitute the path of practice. There's like the five spiritual faculties, five spiritual powers, seven enlightenment factors, the eightfold path. Mindfulness is always placed before concentration. I think it's salient. It's important to note that. Also in there's that lovely um, questions and answers, Majjhima 44, between the Bhikkhuni Dhammadina and the layman Visakha. And Visakha asks, what is concentration? You know, what is samadhi? What's the basis of concentration? What's the equipment of concentration? What's the development of concentration? The answer, and in Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation, say unification of mind is concentration. So and when we speak of say of jhana, so that ekagata ramana, a unification of mind, the mind becoming one, is concentration. Four foundations of mindfulness are the basis of concentration. Four right kinds of striving are the equipment of concentration. Repetition, development, cultivation, the same states is the development of concentration therein. So it's a, it's not magical, mystical, far away. It's back to the basics, which is sort of what I emphasized when we were taking the refuges and precepts this morning. That importance of those, the foundations, the fundamentals, because it's those foundations prepare the mind and give the mind that its opportunity to coalesce or to come together. Ajahn Jeff translates it as singleness of mind being samadhi, so this unification of mind, singleness of mind, ekagata, which is the first, one of the factors of first jhana. And the four frames of reference are its themes, samadhi nimitta is the word, was its basis, its themes, the four right efforts being its requisites, it's what it's based on. The Pali is the samadhi parikara, which for the monastics, and you know, from Thai, borikan, that's what it is parikara from Pali. So there's so much Thai words are based in the Pali. So that sense of the importance of mindfulness as a fundamental root developing of the practice, and that resulting in a state of mind that is, I think one of the things that a way of looking at, say, this word jhana and the experience of it is a fullness of heart. That's one of the things that I think or associate with when for the mind, the heart to really settle, there's a fullness that's experienced. And it's also one of the ways of experiencing a fullness of heart, to me, this most important way of experiencing a fullness of heart is by letting go, relinquishing. You know, so much of our effort gets put into trying to squeeze concentration out of the mind so that you can get and attain jhana, and you end up this kind of poor, poverty-stricken heart. it's not very happy. But that fullness of the heart is an experience that arises as we shed the things that are, say, obstructive or constricting or complicating or agitating, and we can keep shedding. It's that shedding, it's that letting go that allows a fullness of heart to be experienced. And of course, that's coupled with mindfulness, being mindful, being alert, being present. And that's where we can experience that settling of the heart. And it's even when we think about letting go, it's not as if we're pushing away anything, rejecting or trying to annihilate something. It's more like we're shedding that which is really not fruitful or we're not really interested anymore. It's like you've let go of your toy cars or your toy dolls from childhood, your little, what was ever left of your little blankie. we let it go. Because you kind of outgrow it, as opposed to you had to, push it away, annihilate it, get rid of it. It's sort of like, no, it was time to drop it. It just wasn't interesting anymore. So that's the kind of letting go that we let go of things at different levels that allow the heart to really settle, allow the heart to experience a sense of fullness. So I think that's something to pay attention to as when we're practicing and cultivating, say, jhana, or cultivating the meditation, that there's a attending to this quality of fullness, and the access to that fullness is releasing and relinquishing and letting go. So that's kind of an overview, or my overview, of jhana. Ajahn Kurundamo is going to give us some perspective. Maybe before we start that, just give a few questions. I'm not going to have a long question and answer session, but it might be good to just give the opportunity for a couple questions and then turn it over to Ajahn Kurundamo. Okay. If anybody has any questions. Neil.
It's occurring to me as you're speaking that I think I've always had a little bit of confusion, or let's say melding of the terms mindfulness and concentration, and if you could sort of clarify what the difference is between
them. Yeah.
That's not a stupid question.
Yeah, great. No, that's great. Because that's mindfulness is the quality of the mind that is attentive to its experience. And one of the definitions of, being possessed of mindfulness, satima in Pali, is that it has the function to draw objects of the senses, the experience of the objects of the senses, into the heart, so that we experience sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, mental formations, and we are able to know it, recognize it, bring it into the heart, and recognize it, be cognizant of it. That's that quality of mindfulness. There's a mindfulness, there's alertness, there's attentiveness. Concentration is a the Pali word. I mean, and it's important to learn some of these words because because when we could translate them into English, they have certain connotations. So that just the word concentration has a certain cerebral quality to it. It's the mind, the intellect, being able to hone down onto something and to concentrate the mind. But the word samadhi is from the Buddha's time, is much more of a heart quality of stability, firmness, kind of a gravitas or weight to it, so that it's not easily shaken. So that the heart is well established. It's stable. It's firm. Not in a tight way. But in a way, it's like a pyramid is very stable, you know, sits on a big base. So for the mind to be able to have this solid base that allows it to be stable and steady.
You often use the word collected, I think, too.
Yeah, collected is a good word. So that it's say the strength of the mind, so it's gathered together. It's not diffuse. It's not scattered. Okay.
And I had a follow-up question.
Sure.
So that's a clear distinction for me.
Yeah.
But then what's now coming into my mind is you said earlier that mindfulness always comes before concentration.
Yeah.
And based on what you just defined, I would think it would be the opposite.
No, not really. I mean, well, not always. You know, in the sense that they should be supporting each other. But it's that mindfulness of being attentive to the object that allows it to come together and collect itself. Yes.
I was thinking of Anacha's advice that all you need to do is know and let go.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, what about knowing, developing and letting go? Is developing inclusive of knowing and letting go, or?
But I think it's all developing, you know, in that sense, yeah. But I mean, what he's trying to do is trying to get you to come back, simplify things. Because you can say, well, there's knowing, developing, letting go. Oops. Oh, okay, well, and there's knowing, developing, letting you're relinquishing that. You know, and then you can start adding things to it. So as how do we simplify it so that we can not get entangled? And picking what's really salient so that it's really supportive for the mind.